Well, what I'd like to do now is open it up and let you ask questions or make comments or whatever you like. Yeah.
Actually, all of human beings find happiness everywhere, yeah? Mm-hmm. But not the economic is very powerful than happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody find happiness, but economic is very powerful. Mm-hmm. Then inside the economic, mm-hmm. how we find the happiness?
Okay. So you're saying that having financial security with it, a good economy is something that contributes to happiness? Is
yeah.
that?
No, yeah? Yeah, economic is very powerful.
For, yeah.
Yeah, every country
mm-hmm.
On the world, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody wants happiness.
Yeah.
Then how can pick up in the economy? How can pick up happiness and
In the economic situation,
yeah.
I think one thing is to be content, you know, and not be greedy, because when people are very greedy, it creates a lot of suffering. For example, I am American. There are some people in my country who are very greedy, people who own big businesses. So they just think of their own profit. They're becoming rich themselves. So that leads them to not pay adequate wages to other people. That in turn creates unhappiness in society and unhappiness in the world, and that makes more political problems. Yeah, because when you have a big difference between rich people and poor people, then there's going to be much more unhappiness in society, many more political problems, and a lot of fighting going on between the people who are rich and the people who are poor. So I think, you know, first of all, to not be greedy and to share what we have, you know, and treat other people in the economy fairly and give them good wages. And, you know, give them what they need fairly in society instead of just thinking about one's own benefit. Does that answer your question? Okay? Yeah? Other questions? Or if there's particular topics or things that you would like me to comment on, please do.
Could you tell us about the incarnation?
A little bit about reincarnation. You mean how it works?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Actually, all Buddhists explain like that.
Mm-hmm.
Reincarnation is told from Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But in this century, we're not enough, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
We have to know about reincarnation,
mm-hmm.
yeah? Especially in the West.
Yeah, very much, very much. This is a very good question. And, for example, I didn't grow up believing in reincarnation. I didn't know about it as a child. But I had many questions about how life operates and why we experience what we experience. And I found that when I learned about reincarnation, it helped to answer many of my questions. Okay? Because, for example, okay, in my family, we have three children, yeah? So we grew up in a very similar environment, but the way we think is completely different, you know, and our personality is completely different, yeah? So you can even see among brothers and sisters when they're babies, you know, they have very different personalities. Some babies are very peaceful, some babies cry a lot. Little children, you know, some are kind, some are mean, no matter what the parents teach them. So we can see that people come in, you know, even as babies with some kind of conditioning, some kind of energy, you know, or tendencies. that propel them in to have certain qualities. So when we think about rebirth, this can explain, for example, why children in the same family have different personalities, or why even as babies, young children have different characteristics. Okay. A lot of times now, scientists are trying to say that everything depends on genes, you know, on the chemicals in our body, the different cells in our body and cell structure. But if that were the case, then, you know, identical twins would have exactly the same personality. And also, it would be very hard for people to change if they had certain genes. Whereas I think, you know, we can see that we all have the potential to change. Sometimes it's hard, but if we put our energy in, we can do it. So how reincarnation works, okay? Yeah. When we're alive, we have a body and we have a mind, okay? And those two, when they're together, that's called being alive. When we die, the body has a future continuum. It becomes a corpse. It's a dead body. The mind also continues on in the future, yeah? It doesn't just end when we die. Okay, so the mind continues on into another body. Okay, now what is our mind? It's that whole part of us that thinks and feels, that experiences and perceives. Okay, so we can't measure it by scientific instruments, but it's that whole part of us that experiences us, that is conscious, that is aware. Okay, the body alone, without the mind, can't experience anything. Yeah. You know, most of us have probably seen dead bodies. Something's not there, right, when the body's dead. It's the mind that's not there. Yeah. So what happened to the mind? Yeah. Where does it go? So this is where we talk about rebirth, because every moment of mind brings another moment of mind. Okay, even now, okay, what we're thinking this moment produces the mind of the next moment, and the mind of the next moment. Or going backwards, what we're thinking now depends on the mind from yesterday and the mind from the day before. So there's this continuity of mind. So similarly, when we die, the mind continues on. This body is not us, yeah. This body is, you know, just our genes and all the food that we've eaten since we were born, yeah. Body dies, but the mind continues on, yeah. We're not the same person in our next life, yeah. There's a lot of change that happens, but there's a continuity so that what we do now, our actions or the karma we create now, influences what we get reborn as and what we experience in our next lives. Yeah. So we all want to be happy. We don't want to suffer. We're creating the causes for what we're going to experience in the future. And so that's why it's important now to act with a kind heart and to be respectful to other living beings and to abandon actions that are harmful, okay? Because when we harm others, we also create the cause for ourselves to experience pain in the future. When we are kind, we create happiness now and also the cause to experience happiness ourselves in the future.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a more question.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
Yeah, in a Buddhist, yeah. Uh-huh. About reincarnation, about karma, yeah?
Yeah.
Then many Western think that karma doesn't work. We can explain full of about karma. then how can you explain about karma?
Okay, how can you explain about karma to people who don't believe in it? I think to begin, just talking about how cause and effect works. Okay, you know, what's the Tibetan cause is gyu and result is dre. Is that right? Cause and result, gyu dre, yeah. So how, you know, even on a physical level, you know, the farmer plants seeds, then other conditions are necessary, then a crop grows as the result. Also in our life, we do many things to create the cause because we want certain results in the future. For example, now you are studying because you want the result of having a good education and all that that will bring to you in the future. Okay. If there were no cause and effect, why study now? Because you wouldn't learn anything in the future and there would be no benefit from it. But we can see in our life that what we do now, you know, benefits what happens later on in this life. Okay. So cause and effect work. The effects of our actions don't necessarily happen right after we do the action. Okay. You can see, for example, with getting an education, you learn something now, you might not need that information until 5 years from now. Okay? But still, if you learn it now, you can use it 5 years from now and it will benefit you. Okay? So results don't always come right after a cause. You plant seeds in the ground, the plant doesn't grow immediately. Sometimes it takes time. So also, when we do actions, karma, we plant these karmic seeds on our mind stream. The result doesn't necessarily happen right away. But when the karmic seeds are there, then they will bring a result when the right conditions come together. Many times, people who don't believe in karma, they say, why do things happen? Yeah, they have no way to explain why things happen. Yeah, when we're suffering, we always say, why me? Why am I so unfortunate? When we're happy, we very seldom say, why me? Yeah, we always expect to be happy. But in actual fact, whatever happiness or suffering we experience comes from causes that we ourselves created before. So, you know, you asked about how to explain it to people who didn't believe. Let me just talk about my own experience, yeah? Because I ask, you know, why did I become a Buddhist? Okay, if we just think of one lifetime and we don't think about rebirth and we don't think about karma, then there's no reason for me to be a Buddhist. Because if everything depended on genes, you know, from our body, none of my ancestors, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, nobody was Buddhist. Okay, so speaking about genes, there's no reason for me to be a Buddhist. Okay. Then if we just think about the upbringing and what we encounter as children, I grew up in a Christian society. I didn't learn about rebirth. I didn't learn about karma. I didn't learn about Kunshok Sum, you know, the three jewels. None of this. Yeah. So if it was only what happened when we were children, then again, why should I be a Buddhist? There's no reason. I should be doing something else. Okay? So just in my own experience, you know, when I asked myself, why when I heard Buddha's teachings, did I think, oh, this is good. Why was the Dharma something meaningful to me? I think there must have been some karma from previous lives, you know, created some who knows what, but some kind of contact with the Dharma in a previous life or some prayers I made to be able to meet His Holiness and other good teachers. You know? So I have to explain just my own life by thinking about karma, thinking about previous lives. Because if it were just this life, there would be no reason for me to be doing what I'm doing. I should be in America now, you know, being totally miserable. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Do you think that scientists say that they have not been discovered the mind?
Mm-hmm.
Mind is part of belief.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this is a very interesting question, because you might know that His Holiness, over a period of years, has been having dialogues with many scientists. And this very topic has come up. I've been able to go to some of the conferences. And the scientists, actually, they get very confused when you ask them what is the mind. They don't know what to say, because they know what the brain is. You know, they can dissect the brain, but they don't really know what the mind is. So when you ask them what the mind is, they often change the topic. Okay. You know, in one of these scientific conferences, there was one scientist, and he was very stubborn. And he said, there is no mind, there's just the brain. Or he said, like you were saying there, that the mind is just a part of the brain. You know, there's nothing else but the brain. Okay? So he was saying that, for example, when we're happy or when we're angry, that it all depends just on the chemicals and the electronic, you know, structure that's going on in the brain. He said, that's all it is. So then His Holiness said to him, because Holiness is very sharp, he said, if somebody's brain was on the table, okay, do you think that brain is a person? Yeah. If you see the brain, do you love the brain? Is loving the brain the same as loving the person? Okay. Then that scientist, he couldn't say anything. He didn't know what to say to answer it. Yeah. Because it's very clear that when the brain is there, you don't say hello, Lobsang, do you? Yeah. Somebody's brain is there, you go, ugh. Yeah. Okay. So we don't think of the brain as being the person. And we can see that the brain by itself, it doesn't get angry, it isn't happy, it doesn't experience emotions. The brain is just, you know, atoms and molecules, physical material lying there. Okay. So, you know, the brain, there, something else is necessary besides the brain for there to be life. In some of these conversations with the scientists, His Holiness started to speak about how, on the gross levels, the gross level of consciousness is dependent upon the brain. Okay? Because we can see that when the brain changes, our mood changes. But His Holiness was also suggesting sometimes maybe it's our moods that change first and that produces the change in the brain. That we're not really sure which one comes first, but there is a relationship between the two. But then His Holiness talked about that even when somebody is brain dead or even when they've stopped breathing, there can still be consciousness. There can still be mind present. And he gave the example of Kyabche Ling Rinpoche, who meditated in the clear light for 13 days after his breath stopped. Yeah. The scientists were so surprised to hear this. They didn't know that that was possible. Okay. So, you know, these kinds of examples show that on a very subtle level, It's possible for the mind to exist without depending on a brain. Okay. Does that kind of speak to your question a little bit? Yeah. I think for the scientists who say that there's just the brain. Yeah. I was at one of these science conferences. I was talking with one of them, and I asked him. I said, when you get unhappy and you're depressed, do you think, oh, it's just the neurons in my brain emitting chemicals? He said, no. So he did all this research, but, you know, on the brain and how the neurons in the brain work. But he can't use any of that to deal with his own mind and solve his problems when he's unhappy, you know. Because he said, yeah, when he's unhappy, he always blames the other person or he feels sorry for himself, you know. Whereas if this kind of research were useful, maybe he would just say, oh, it's just my brain, you know. I don't need to be unhappy. Okay. But I think the scientists, when they start to look at their own personal experience, you know, and then they begin to see just from their own personal experience that there isn't just physical matter. There isn't just the brain and chemicals and, you know, electronic impulses in the nervous system, that there's also something else. So, I think that this is, you know, a field for more exploration. In September, His Holiness was in Boston for another one of these Mind Life conferences, talking with the scientists. And one of the scientists there did research about concentration. And he was very surprised to hear that there are Buddhist meditators who can focus on one object for a very long period of time without getting distracted. Because in all of his scientific research, he, you know, all he knows is that people change the object of their thoughts very, very quickly. So he was really surprised to learn that meditation can produce deep concentration and extended attention. So he's now interested in doing some research with Buddhist meditators to see how this works. Yeah. So there's actually more scientific research going on now about the brain and the relationship with the mind and the emotions and how they interrelate.